And then, guys, welcome back to the Once You're In podcast. Apologies for last week. I was away, so we didn't get around to doing the podcast. Is this episode 15?
14.
14.
I thought it was 14, yeah.
14 or 15. Maybe last week should have been 14 and this would have been 15. Mm. I don't know. But yeah, apologies for last week. I'll hold my hands up for that one. Although you didn't even message me. Maybe I was available, but you didn't even message me.
Yeah.
You didn't even talk to me while I was away.
I think I ignored every message.
We didn't even talk, did we?
You sent me one about my training session and I opened it like 4 days later and I was like, oh shit, didn't reply.
So busy. Such a massive workload.
It's just so busy. But no, we've actually got a bit of an update to go through in the sense of it's been 2 weeks, so it's not the usual, this is what we've done. This is the normal kind of thing. So how was your holiday, mate? How was your training? I saw you put up a post flexing on a beach saying how to track things and stay on track away and stuff like that. So
fantastic post.
Yeah, mate. Yeah, fantastic post. Give us an update. Where did you go? What did you do? How was your training? How was your nutrition?
Good. I went to Scarborough, which is in North Yorkshire. Scarborough. People say it like that. It was weird. A lot of people sounded like my mum when we went there because my mum's got like a Yorkshire accent. So my mum loved it. She was like, oh, I feel like I'm at home. But yeah, it was good. We went only for like Monday to Thursday, came back like we were going to come back early on Thursday, but then Thursday was the nicest day. The weather was lovely on Thursday, so we ended up staying. That's why I messaged you and then I hired you. You have to train on your own. But no, it was good. There's not much to cover really. I still worked and trained as normal. We did a D volume week, didn't we? So it kind of lined up perfectly where I needed a D volume anyway. I could have probably done with one maybe in a week or two before it, but it was almost like I was still training well. And then I was like, well, I'm going away so I can align it perfectly and still train, but not be out of the house for 4 hours when like my family were doing things. Because I went with like my whole family. It was me, Shannon, my mum, my dad, both my sister's husband and their baby. So it was like eight of us. And to manage, like you couldn't, I said when we first got there, I was like, I'm going to do what I want to do. And if it aligns with what everyone else is doing, then great. Like, but I'm not going to sit for 4 days just with like staring at everyone. Because you know what I mean, like that's what like, in the past that's what holidays have been, haven't they? Before you were busy, holidays were just literally you do fuck all and you just do what everyone else is doing. Whereas now it was like I've got my work to be doing and I still want to train, I still want to eat relatively well. So yeah, read my posts, guys, to see how I managed it all. It's so hard to manage. Yeah. But no, it was good. Training was pretty good. The first gym.
Trained a few different gyms, didn't you?
Yeah. So I messaged, you know, Danny, the guy that owns Insight Sups?
Yeah.
I messaged him because I went on, I basically searched like gyms in Scarborough and then I looked on their Instagrams and he'd been there like the week before or something on holiday. So I messaged him just asking how the gym was because he trained at the first gym I went to.
Pleased to be me.
He absolutely snaked me, mate. He snaked me. He told me it was the best gym in the world. He said it was good, and it wasn't really. It was all right. Like he didn't big it up, but he was like, yeah, it was decent for like upper body. He said lower body, it's got a decent hack and leg press. They were okay. Like I was expecting, it was all Force equipment or non-branded kit. Like, so I was a bit like, it's okay. But it did the job. That I did legs there and it was all right. But my back, because the hack wasn't great, my back's been pretty trashed from that ever since. And then I trained, so that was Fashionable Fitness. Really fashionable, mate.
That sounds
Went in a shirt and tie and everything. Everyone, you had to train in shirt and tie. It was weird.
Formal attire only.
Well, it was literally what they call it? Black tie. Yeah. And then the second gym I went to where I did push was at it was called Compass Fitness, which was way better and it was cheaper. It was like a fiver for that for a session, and it was £8 at Fashionable Fitness. So yeah, if you're in Scarborough, go to Compass Fitness because it's actually a really good gym. They're just missing like a hack. Or a pendulum. They just haven't got a decent squat variant. But obviously you could do a
V squat or anything. Was it just?
I don't think there was. I literally think it was just a leg press. But they had a decent leg extension. They had Panatta lying ham. They had the Panatta shoulder press that I used. Some of the old Cybex version 1 Eagle stuff. So it was actually, it was really good. That session was way better. And then obviously traveled home on the Thursday. But yeah, it was nice, mate. It was like I said to you when I saw you on Saturday, I was like, it wasn't really like a break. But it was still nice.
Yeah.
Just a change of scenery, doing what I'd normally do, but just somewhere else and spending a bit more time with family.
Yeah. I kind of will agree with what you mentioned about the family and the holidays. The one thing I was actually quite lucky at is whenever I've gone on holiday, like especially last year, obviously I wasn't as busy as I was or as I am now, but it was still where like I get up, get through check-ins, and then I'd like crack on with the rest of my day. And I feel like the one benefit of like my family, so like my mum being flat out, is she worked for more than I did. So it's never where like holidays to me is never just sat around looking at each other, as you said, and just kind of like chatting shit. My mum, I'd be the one who's doing that. My mum's cracking on with work pretty much till like we go out in the evening. So yeah, I've never been in that situation, but like judging off when I went on holiday, you know, like one of my ex-girlfriends, and I said to you, I think I told you about this when I was in Spain, I decided to like take the longest trip to the gym. Was 45 minutes away of a walk, so I used to walk to the beach, which was about half an hour, then I'd walk along the beach and I'd be out the house from like 11 to like 6. Yeah, so it'd be like I'd literally get up early, get out, sunbathe for a bit. The second the family got up, they just kind of sit around doing nothing. So I'd be like, right,
I think it depends on the type of holiday that you're going on. Like, because I think you can get away with that to an extent. Like when me and Shannon went to Egypt, like we had a couple of days where we literally just chilled and we'd go down to the pool and we'd sunbathe.
When you get there and there's a long, decent amount of time.
Yeah, we had 2 weeks. Yeah. So like, but obviously we went to Saudi for a few days. Right.
Yeah.
But even then, when we were in Egypt for 2 weeks, like my food was still the same. I told you I had breakfast one and breakfast two because it was open till from like 6 to 11, so we had breakfast one and breakfast two, and then so like I was still eating every few hours and stuff, and I'd still train and that, but the time that I'd usually be maybe me and Shannon in an evening would get a chance to watch a bit of Netflix or whatever, that free time we'd be getting a phone call, mate, that free time we'd be doing like we'd be out on the beach or snorkeling or going on trips and stuff like that. So but yeah, when it's like a 3 day thing, you cram it with stuff anyway, don't you? You cram it with loads of tasks and shit to do because it's you've only got like 2-3 days somewhere.
Yeah, it was good.
How have you been?
Sound, to be fair, similar to you, mate. D-volume rotation was in, so we wrapped that up on Saturday. Technically, yesterday was the first session back to the full volume. I trained at Ultraflex Rotherham Monday, Wednesday, Thursday. So petrol was too high. I'm broke. I'm never going to be able to financially recover.
Now you're making me do all the drive.
Yeah, I know you're driving tomorrow and Thursday because you always. That's what it is. But no, so a bit of a change up of rotations. Me and Finn have kind of rather think, especially with the kit now at Ultraflex, it's a lot better for push. I'm never saying it wasn't great. It was good, but we used to do. I think it was an upper session there. Back end of last year, wasn't it? And like the first like horizontal press, the shoulder presses there have always been fantastic, but we tried every single press there and it was like just a bit like off,
niggly on it every time.
Yeah, like there was the flat prime press, which was like a very slight incline, but it was just, it felt a bit poor.
Oh, your pick on it, didn't you?
Yeah. So we've seen someone. It was such a hard movement to get
switched on. It was awful to see.
Awful. We just saw someone's pec snap off the bone, and then somehow managed to train for the rest of the session perfectly well. And they got a video as well, and they asked Finn, you got that video of me snapping my pec? And they're like, well, mate, you still trained afterwards. You were fine. So yeah. So basically, the kit there for pressing wasn't. It's an Ultraflex. It was great. It's better than the vast majority of gyms, but there wasn't something that was like, right, you go to do this. Where now they have the Explode, like Gymshop Nautilus flat press. They have the low incline prime. They have the shoulder press, the prime shoulder press. They have like a prime dip. There's like obviously all the bits of kit that they've got, like a Gymshop Nautilus high incline and stuff. They've got everything you'd want for pressing. So what we decided to do was instead of having we used to train pull. I used to do pull, Finn would do lower on Monday at Ultraflex. We've now actually swapped that session around. So we're training at Warehouse Monday. We're doing Wednesday, Thursday, Ultraflex Rotherham. So we're there for push and then we're there for lower. And these are the two sessions where we actually train together. So it's quite nice. Like if you think about it, like we're both going to be training there, doing the same sort of movements. And I've tried out a few different movements. The hack squat, Cybex hack was in on Thursday, which is just reminds me how brutal it is and how much of a kick in the teeth. I could probably have done 7 plates on the Atlantis hack. Cybex, half of it. Like, it's a challenge.
I'm worried about what I'll get.
Yeah, I know. It'll be good to see.
I think it'll be very similar to yours.
Yeah, I'd say so. I'd say so. But either way, like, it'll be good to see how we are after, like, actually setting some numbers there. Because obviously I kind of went through the session plans, like, that I would have thought we would have gone through anyway. You kind of said, yep, they're spot on, we'll give it a go. Obviously, you might jump on one of the movements tomorrow and think it's a bit wank. But in reality, I thought the kit that was there, I played around with it a fair bit last week. So I feel like what we've got is we've got a good kind of session plan to go off. So for push, it's four presses. We're going with the low incline prime press first, bottom pin. Go play around for the second set because I only did a D volume, so I did one set. Prime shoulder press, second press. Nautilus, like flat chest press. Just I think I had two sets on that, didn't we? But I might just do one. It will depend on how I feel. For the third press, and then a close grip Smith machine press as the, like, the tricep compound. So it's actually four presses. So we're going to be trialing out technically four presses for the first time, which I know we spoke about before. We always wanted to see if we can get away with it, but we'll just, especially with the kit available to us, and we thought we might as well give it a go. And then likewise, the lower session.
I was going to say, if it is literally just two or one set, then we should be sound, because I've been doing seven sets.
I've been doing five. That's the thing, though. So it's an extra set for me. That's the only issue.
Yeah, I have been, haven't I? So I've been doing two. Yeah, I've been doing two on the reverse banded Smith, two on the shoulder press, and then three on the flat Nautilus press.
Yeah.
So yeah, it has been seven. It'd be very similar for me if I do 2-2-2-1.
Yeah.
It sound.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be overreaching because I've done five and I'm doing six.
And so you're in prep. Your recovery capabilities are in the bin.
Absolutely awful. But yeah, speaking about prep, I got actually asked a question by Perrin. So I'm kind of answering his question. But he put, how are you? I think he actually asked about you. He said, hopefully you're both doing well. So we've kind of given an update. And then he asked about how prep. So I'll give the update on the little prep update. I'm actually going to put up a prep update after this. I've kind of wrote up one. That I'm going to upload off, you know, some of the photos that Matt took or videos of Matt took.
Yeah.
But all in all, I think I'm in quite a good spot. I haven't really made any drastic changes. I have made some changes over the last couple of days, but I held off on any changes. I wasn't going to say I'm ahead of the game because I'm where I need to be. But I think we were both agreeing. I was coming in, like, the difference between weeks 20 and 16 were like, yeah, okay. And then 16 to 12 was quite drastic where I was probably, I skipped a bit.
It wasn't even that. It was within a week.
Yeah. Like,
all of a sudden, you were lean. You weren't lean. Yeah. And then it was like, just like, by the click of a finger, it's like, oh, shit, you actually look lean now. It was like you were almost holding on to a bit of fluid. And then as soon as that came off, it was like, yeah, you actually, you know, you can tell you're a lot leaner. Weight didn't change massively, did it?
No, weight stayed relatively the same. I was 101.1 this morning, so the lightest weighing. Tuesdays, I'm always... Every single Tuesday, no matter what, I'm the lightest I'm always at. It's really peculiar.
I thought that might have changed, actually, with being at warehouse now, though.
Yeah,
session is always brutal at Ultraflex.
Yeah.
Now, still a tough session, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just the travel's different.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. But, no, all seems to be good. So, 101.1, which puts me a kilo down probably from the last podcast we've done. Training's in a really good spot. As you mentioned, visual look, like, the difference between those Leeds photos, like, it was 3 weeks in between and I look completely different. And it would be good to see where I'm at now because I feel like, I don't know, I think each week it's just getting better and better. So, I've made a few little tweaks and changes. Like I said, I'll summarise it in the prep update later on the post. So, by the time this is out, if you want to have a look on my Instagram. But, basically, pulled down food on training days. I've actually took out the grenade bar, mate. That's my last bro food that I had. And the rest of it. Yeah, that was the last bit of, like, bro food that I had that was, like, proper IFYM, if it fits your macros, whatever you want to say. Yeah. So basically, that was the last bit of food that I had. So pulled that down and I added an extra 100 grams of yogurt. And then 10 grams of dark chocolate. So basically, I think it's like 10 carb, 10 protein and 5 fat that's been pulled. So quite a decent drop, to be fair. That was like, that wasn't just your standard of 25 carb here or something. It was quite an in-depth kind of drop. And then likewise, cardio has gone up. So the Tour de France champion is stepping forward because I'm now doing 40 minutes of cardio 3 times a week. And then 20 minutes of cardio on my push session, like fasted. Heart rate's the same. I exceeded 500 calories this morning.
40 minutes every rest day.
Yeah, 40 minutes every rest day. And then one session of 20 minutes on a training day. That might be subject to change, but I quite like the idea. Like 20 minutes on a training day, that means I can just literally get up, get cracking. I can be a bit more intense, which I know sounds counterintuitive, but it means I can be like, right, just get on 20 minutes and I'm good.
I honestly
almost have to pace myself.
I think just for the mental aspect of it and the routine, I want to start getting on top of it and just doing cardio every morning. Like, not intense, literally just 20 minutes to start my day. Like, because whenever you do it, you feel better. Like, you always feel better. Your digestion's going to be better. You just feel more productive. So even out, if you're not in prep, I do think it is beneficial. Like, it's just whether or not you have the available time to do it. Like, obviously for us, we can do it because I work, I'd be biking there. Like, I work literally right next to where I'd do it and stuff. So I could manage it. It's not like I have to be at work for a certain time. It's just getting into the routine of doing it.
Yeah. But no, so yeah, I'm liking that. Everything seems good. Steps at the same spot. So I haven't really played around with steps. I don't really think I will, if I'm honest. Like, they're 12,500 on rest days. And then on training days, they're 10,000. But usually they creep up to like 10.5 to 11. Because I just want it that bad. So it's almost where like...
Too much.
Yeah, I want it too much. So, I mean, they might go up on a rest day, like but I don't really think they need to. Like, there's not going to be much benefit. Like, 2,500 extra steps is like, I'd rather just maybe add an additional, maybe a 20-minute cardio session on another train session.
Or whatever. I find with steps, you get to a certain point where it's not going to be beneficial increasing them anymore. Like, Slater's at the exact same point. Like, he's, I think, the exact same as you, 10,000 on a train day, 12,500 on a rest day. And he works, mate. His job is like, a lot of the time he's traveling, and obviously for us, we can pretty much go on a walk when we want. Like, we can't, but we can, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, even so, like 10 to 12,000 steps for our job is difficult for time and everything. So imagine doing a job where you're like on the road driving for however many hours a day and stuff. Like, I think it gets to a certain point where I'd much rather pull food or increase cardio than increase someone's steps when you get to that point. But then you've also got other people, like Sonny's steps are like 15 to 20,000.
That's because
that's because of his lifestyle and his occupation. So it's annoying because I said to him, like, it's not ideal, we have no room to play with the steps, but also they're just gonna have to stay constant. Like, I'm not gonna push his steps any higher than that, but also for him, even if I did, it would probably be, it wouldn't be a massive issue because he's hitting 15,000, which is just the norm.
Yeah.
So if I was to like, right, let's make sure we hit 17,000, like, it sounds a huge amount.
That's literally a walk. That's a lot of 2,000 step walk.
For him, it's just, I need to go on a walk when I'd usually go and sit down. Like,
yeah.
So yeah. But I think for you, like, there's no point really increasing them now.
No.
With your job and everything, with how long we train and stuff as well. Like, I just think finding the time.
My steps on my training days are easy, like, because we're in the gym for so long. All I have to think is I'm just consciously a little bit more active and I'm like moving around and such. And if I'm honest, my steps are probably higher. I take my watch off because it annoys me when I train.
Yeah, it will
be higher. So, and then I'll try and have my phone in my pocket if I'm walking, but like most of the time I have my phone off me. So my steps are probably a little bit higher, but at the same time, like, as long as I see a minimum of where they need to be at, everything seems good. So to summarize, 10 and a half weeks to go, which is, it's coming around quick. And I feel like, again, from a visual standpoint, it's in a very good spot. My back's still fat, but from a mental standpoint, I'm starting to feel, I said it in the last few podcasts, like, I'm starting to feel like I'm dieting now, which is normal, like, it's going to be expected. My rest days are wicked because I'm not battered for my training sessions. I'm awful in the evenings, awful after my training sessions. Like, I get in and I'm like, oh, I feel like I've been hit by a bus still. But I think that's going to be expected. It's clearly, mate, the 220 stiff leg just ruins me. And then likewise, every session just batters me. I think it's the four sessions currently, which are very, very, very demanding. Yeah. So, and it's almost like, because I've never been dieting at this level of accuracy and then likewise the level of intensity and strength, I feel like my body is a bit more, I'm like, oh, this is different, you know? Like, I've dieted in the past, but like last year we were dieting and it was like lockdown training where we both weren't as accurate as we are now. Likewise, years gone in by, like I'd be like, if I was pressing, let's say 7 plates per side on the leg press, I'd be impressed. Or like if I was pressing the 50s, I'd be impressed. Where now, like, the demand on my body is higher. So after my training sessions, like, I'm written off and I have a lot extra food. So it's not linked to food. It's just linked to the sessions and how much they take out.
I think it's that you're more aware, to be honest, than anything.
Yeah. Because
like, if you think about that, like, we've said this before, when we used to train together, we weren't as accurate, but we used to absolutely bury ourselves and we'd feel fucked afterwards, but it was like, oh, it's just normal because we sort of didn't know the difference between like feeling fatigued from a good session versus just absolutely burying yourself in a hole. Like, it was normal. And because our sessions were let's say like 70% of the level that we're at now back then,
yeah,
it was just normal to train decent. You know what I mean? Like, whereas now, as soon as we have like a bit of an off session or even like an off lift, we're like, what the fuck? Yeah. Like, what? Why is that? And then we know, we can assess why it is. And usually there's a reason behind it. Whereas back then, that it was kind of normal for that to happen. And I don't think we were as aware as we are, or we definitely weren't anywhere near as aware as we are now in terms of like how fatigued we are and whether we're managing it as well as we could and things like that.
Yeah, spot on. Right, so yeah, everything's good from my end. Everything's good from Finn's end. For 2 weeks in, I think everything seems to be in a good spot for since the last podcast. Right, so we've got a few questions. Not that many this time, but at the same time, we can always go through a few. Do you want me to start, mate?
Yeah, you can do.
Okay, so another fantastic listener of the podcast. That seems to be my favourite phrase. Basically, a guy who listens extremely well and asks really good questions. Toby does fitness. Zero. He has the title of every video at this point. We're gonna have to swap it around. He put do rack pills, so not pulled pills. Do rack pills have a place in weight training? I seen them get a lot of hate. Well, firstly, Toby, your grammar here, mate, is appalling. Absolutely shocking question format. So rack pulls, do they have a place in weight training? Well, I guess they do because they're an exercise, therefore they do have a place in weight training.
They don't at that gym that they're banned.
Yeah, they don't in certain gyms where they're banned. But I'm guessing he means in like a from a bodybuilding hypertrophy SFR stimulus to fatigue ratio. What's your opinion on rack pulls, sir?
I feel like they're one of those exercises where generally the reason that people do them are because anybody can look strong at them. So yeah. I've seen people with barely any muscle doing 200 plus on a rack pull, but they're literally their range of motion is 8 inches. And it's like, oh yeah, well done. Like anybody can do that. You're pretty much just doing it like a leg press. You're using your quads to pick that up. Like that is pretty much it. So yeah, I would argue that if it's done correctly, if it's done well, if it's below the knee, and if you're maybe doing it because you lose tightness in the bottom of an RDL or a deadlift, or you've got some back issues, which means that you're limited by range, then yeah, 100%. Like any exercise has a place. You have to manipulate it to your needs. But if you had the option of an RDL, a conventional deadlift, even like a 45 degree hyper, I would prefer those as a hip hinge movement than a rack pull. But I guess some people will use a rack pull more so, like they're not really doing it as a hip hinge, they're just doing it as like a spinal extension exercise. But then again, I would argue that you don't really want to be loading your spine with however much load that you're trying to do a rack pull with. Like it's not really going to be the safest exercise that you could do like for spinal extension. You're not going to be strong doing that. I think, like you said, obviously from a stimulus to fatigue ratio sort of standpoint, it's probably the worst option of many exercises you could actually choose from. But if, like I say, for whatever reason, due to injury or due to execution, whatever it may be, if it is more suitable for you at that given time, then great. But don't use it just to try and boost your ego thinking that you're strong when you're not.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think it's... you can almost draw a comparison to like a barbell squat, but the problem is the entry and the requirements for entry are completely different. So for example, some clients will have a gym with a pin loaded leg press and a barbell and a rack, like there's not even a Smith machine, you know, and you might be thinking, right, they have to do a barbell squat. And if you were to place a squat in the patterns of movements and what's going to be beneficial, you're going to have a hack squat, a pendulum squat. They're going to be far more efficient movements. But because of the cost to entry, as mentioned, for a hip hinge, if you have a barbell, you can do a stiff leg. You can do an RDL. You can do a deadlift. You could do a paused variant of any of those. Like you could do a sumo, whatever it's going to be. All these are going to have better bang for your buck. And then at the same time, fatigue-wise, because loading is going to be reduced, is also going to play a factor. So I don't really think there's much purpose. The only thought process I can think is you get a decent amount of load. And like if you're beginning out and your hip hinge execution's poor, you can get a decent amount of load on your posterior chain, and you could almost use that as a strengthening up
kind
of.
Yeah, but again, like.
But no, and I say that with the only kind of, that's the only merit I could think other than the ones you mentioned. And even then, I just say, just pull from the floor. Or
I feel like you could relate that to anything though, because you could be like, yeah. Oh, I'm not strong in the bottom of a squat, so I'm just loading it up and doing the top of it.
That's what I mean. It's very similar thought processes. Like, you get people who say that, and like they can't really explain it. So I feel like, for example, if you were to look at weight training objectively, hypertrophy, minimal. If we're talking about other elements of training, there will be merit. For example, if you deadlift and you're very strong at deadlifts, but your lockout is poor, I'm not coming from a powerlifting like professional kind of background, but I have some understanding, at least enough to say a rack pull could be prescribed. It would actually aid your deadlift, potentially lockout. So you could say, right, that might help. But at the same time, like, if we're talking strictly from a bodybuilding standpoint, I don't have a single client doing a rack pull. No. I don't think I ever will. I think I might have given one or two here or there if there was injuries or issues. But again, like, we're talking in the year and a half to 2 years worth of coaching, minimal times ever. So yeah, I think we're both pretty much agreed upon that. I think they can have a place, but I think that place is very, very almost irrelevant to the point where you better. Right.
If you were to perform it absolutely, like, perfectly.
Oh yeah, super slow eccentric.
Yeah, you're control, basically doing like a block pull. You wouldn't, like, if someone was doing a block pull where the bar was coming, like, let's say to the top of their shin or the mid shin, you wouldn't be like, oh, that's horrendous. But it's because when people do a rack pull, they just absolutely butcher it. That it's just known as an exercise that you shouldn't do because people just don't do it well. Like, if it was done well and people were to set it up correctly, then it wouldn't have as bad of a name, because it's not an awful exercise. It's just how most people perform it, and also that there's a lot of better alternatives.
No, agreed. Right, your question, mate. There we go.
Mate, I've not got them ready.
Shocking.
Okay. So, how many hours you sleep on a bulk? So this is from Edu Carreras. So, mate, how many hours you sleep on a bulk?
Well, it's a good thing you specialise bulk, because I have actually different. I have for my clients bulk sleep time and dieting sleep time, and it's different. Yeah, so basically, like, if they accidentally go into a calorie deficit for one day, they undereat. I'm like, mate, why didn't you tick off your dieting sleep time? Like, that's what you need to be focused on. You need to get in. Yeah, you need to get in an extra sleep cycle now. So. I find it funny how this, it's the same as, like, you know, the questions like, what can a natural recover from? Like, it's the same kind of answer, and there shouldn't be, I don't think he's actually meaning it. Like, I think he's probably just in a gaining phase. He wants to be as optimal as possible, and therefore he's thinking, right, how long should I sleep? So to break it down, sleep cycles, they work in 90 minute windows. So an hour 30, 3 hours, 4 hours 30, 6 hours, 7 hours 30, 9 hours. Now, basically sleep cycles go through all stages of sleep. Ideally, you'd want to get in pretty much as many sleep cycles as possible to a certain degree. Usual for performance, recovery, hormone functions and kind of regulations, you'd want 7 hours 30, like that kind of five sleep cycle mark seems to be the sweet spot. If you can get in a further sleep cycle, it's not going to be a bad idea. I personally find it absolutely impossible to sleep for longer than 7 hours 30 unless I'm like, I've had a shit night's worth of sleep. I could go to bed, have everything perfect, I'm not waking up after. I get up 7 hours 30 after I go to bed every single night. Very strange, but it's always been like that with me. Struggle to oversleep unless I've underslept for a certain purpose. So again, I would look at it and I'd be thinking, right, 7 hours 30 as a minimum. It's gaining phase, dieting phase, maintenance phase, whatever it's going to be. If you go under your sleep, there could be some merit to trying to, let's say, bank on your sleep on the weekend. You don't get, like, that doesn't make sense. Like, that you don't get an actual benefit from having 9 hours if you're then sleeping for 6 hours in the week. You don't get like a superficial response of having an intended sleep cycle. It doesn't all add up. It's not where, like, you could look at it from a weekly calorie perspective and think, well, in a weekly calorie I'm in a deficit, or a weekly sleep I'm in a five sleep cycle surplus per day, or whatever it's going to be. But yeah, I would almost just have a look and I'd be thinking, right, 7 hours 30, look at your actual sleep quality and not just your sleep time. Loads of my clients, they say to me, oh, my sleep time's this, but they have their sleep quality down as pretty poor. They're waking up multiple times. I have some clients, mate, that sleep for 6 hours a day, but their sleep quality is mint. sleep 6 hours a night, and their sleep quality is mint. And I'm like, yeah, like if they can't due to work circumstances, I know we'll probably have clients who are getting up at 4:30, 5:30 a.m. And I always try and say to them, like, you need to optimize this to a better degree. But some people's schedules, literally, they struggle to on like a week-to-week setting. And if they can perform well, still progress, it's not going to be maybe optimal, but from an individual-to-individual sense, it's not going to be the end of the world if they're sleeps a little bit off here or there. So yeah, 7 hours 30 I'd say is the minimum. You can get in 9 hours, go for it, but I try and keep a minimum of that 7 hours 30.
Yeah, I'd agree. Like the only thing I would say is that for a lot of people, 7.5 hours is very, very difficult, like with their routine. Yeah. Like yeah. I have some clients who work like 12-hour days plus trying to train and maybe do steps and cardio, and they've got a family, like things like that. It's like it's very difficult. So I always say to people, like, 6 hours is the absolute minimum. Like, if it's below six, I'm like, right, this is a real issue that we need to sort out.
Yeah, yeah, I'd agree.
If it's above six, I'm like, okay, right, how's the quality? And like you say, if the quality is great at 6 hours, then, and they're literally, mate, I would really struggle to get any more than six, then I'm like, okay, cool. I'm not going to come down on you and be like, come on, you need to get more because they don't have enough hours in the day. But for someone who's like a student who can literally sleep as much as they want, let's say, I would just say get as much as you possibly can. You're going to benefit from it. If you can nap in the day, nap in the day. If you can sleep 9-10 hours at night, sleep 9-10 hours at night. Like, you will benefit from more, unless you're the type of person who feels more sluggish the more and more you sleep. But for me, like you're saying, like you can only get 7.5 hours. Like, if I had no commitments and could literally just sleep and wake up when my body woke me up, I reckon I'd probably get like 8 to 9 hours every night. And it also depends on so many things. Like we've said before, like how is your day set up? Are you mentally challenging yourself? Are you physically challenging yourself? Because if you're not doing anything like that, like you're going to struggle to get 7.5 hours of quality sleep. Whereas if you're like having a really rammed day with work and training and this and that, like you're probably going to need more sleep than someone who's not doing that.
I'd agree. I think that what you mentioned towards the end is spot on. Like I used to, like obviously my structure and routines change, but like I'd be able to have a day where I'd like go to the gym, train, I get in the evening, and like we've mentioned as a joke, like when you're 17, 18, you stay up on Snapchat chatting to girls or Instagram. And like, mate, the thought of doing that now, like I don't even want to go on my phone. I don't want to go near my phone. Like I'm,
mate, I hope
playing video games in the evening, and it's a shame because like I try and make time like on a rest day I might like I don't know hop on for a half an hour onto like a video game, but like on like my training days, mate, I get in and I'm like, the last thing I want to do is spend any mental power, like I'm ruined. And I feel like that's again going to be a driver. There's so many people, I've been the same, we've been the same when we were teens, that you do nothing in the day, you train, and then you get around to like 11 p.m. and your brain's still like, oh, what's happening? What's this? What's that? And then you just waste time. So
no, like you won't even have the energy for it.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. So many check-ins. So it's just so many check-ins.
It's a massive workload.
Such a massive workload. Right. So, all right, mate. So this account has 120,000 followers. They follow 94 people. I'm one, and they're not a fitness account. I don't know why. Like, it's an anime account called Shonon Waves. So Shonon Waves has asked, what's your favourite part about fitness?
It's a random account that posts about anime.
Yeah, and it's got literally follows 94 people. They followed me about a month ago, and I thought like, oh, this is one of those bot accounts where you know you like you follow, they'll follow you, follow them back because you're like, oh my god, loads of followers, but they're still following me. I was like, what?
Now they're
asking
questions.
Yeah,
I think we've answered this before.
Yeah, we won't give much of an in-depth answer.
I feel like we both just said, I'm pretty sure we answered it, and I was like, the relationships that you can build, like, because we wouldn't know each other if it wasn't for training. Like, yeah. We wouldn't have a career if it wasn't for fitness and training.
We'd be unemployed.
We would be unemployed.
We'd have no friends, because literally, that's all it is. We'd
be on Snapchat till 4 a.m. Yeah, I guess, I would say, like, the relationships you can build from it, because especially when like when you get to a certain point, like there's almost like a level where now like a lot we know a lot of people simply through social media because they train well.
Yeah.
Like, and if we saw them, we'd be like, oh, hey, mate. And we'd never even met them. Like, no. I think that's pretty cool. But there's loads of downsides to it all as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of bell ends, unfortunately. But yeah, I'm one. Yeah. So that's what it is. Yeah, definitely me on it. My favourite part about fitness, the constant chase of progression. That's what. So now, what's your favourite part about fitness?
You mean Big Shane's? Big Shane's there.
Big Shane's there. Shane Kelly. Fantastic listener of the podcast.
What is it?
Number one
fan
page.
Yeah, number one. Have you, what's your favourite part about fitness?
Training.
That's it, training.
Fantastic answer.
Fantastic answer that, training. What about anything about training? The banded lap pull down?
Lap pull down, yeah.
The banded lap pull down. That's what it is. Yeah, banded Smith machine lap pull down. Right, do you want me to ask another? Because that was a bit of a... Or do you want to go through yours? You go through yours.
I haven't got amazing questions.
Yeah.
This is from Sonny. If Ultraflex opened in Leicester, would you just train at Ultraflex?
Yes.
Yeah. Simple answer, mate. Yes.
Next question.
I think a lot of people would from around.
Yeah. Here. That's why we're making our own. That's what it's going to be. Ultraflex Loughborough. Ultraflex Leicester.
We ought to speak to the owners.
Yeah, and say, right, give us this much, and we'll give you a gym that you could have easily set up on your
own.
Yeah, it would be literally that. And like Loughborough would be good because it's off the motorway. You could find a good spot. You just need a big warehouse and enough kit. But yeah, definitely. The reason why we train in different gyms, there's a lot of reasons. I think we explained this actually on one podcast, but it's because there's not one gym with everything that you need. Like there's not a single gym local to us that has absolutely everything. And that is quite, I'm not going to say, like, for example, you're training in the shed first 4 months of the year. So we're grateful. It's not where we're ungrateful. But when your lives revolve around training, we can be quite picky with our kit and where we're training. So we decide to train in the gyms that suit each session to the best of our ability. So therefore,
we could train at a pure gym still, and we'd still have really good sessions, and we'd still get probably as much out of our training as we do now. Yeah. But
and we'd have about five. We'd have six plates, a reverse band matrix attack.
Right, it wouldn't be ideal. We wouldn't be maximizing our potential, and we wouldn't be in an environment that would push us forward as much as somewhere else. Like if we were in a pure gym, we would be like most machines. I'm not going to be like, we'd stack everything. We wouldn't, but a lot of the machines we'd be like,
I would,
we're going to have to put on a certain amount to this. You wouldn't, your leg extensions are horrendous.
The matrix leg extension is appalling. No one's stacking that with good form.
It is heavy.
Yeah. No one's stacking that. The mid-range, Jesus Christ. It's so heavy in the mid-range, it pulls you forward. Like
I've had clients like, oh, mate, I'm stacking the leg extension. I'm like, you're not. Please film it for me.
Nobody's listening to this can stack the matrix leg extension with immaculate form. Like, it's so easy. And the worst thing is, it's so easy to do. For some reason, the matrix is the hardest one, and it's also the easiest. So easy to throw around, but it's the hardest leg extension just because that midpoint is so, so challenging. And then it drops off. It's like easy, impossible, easy. It makes no sense at all.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
But even if we had to use it, we'd manage and you'd make the most of it, and we'd band it, or we'd slow it down and we'd keep the tempo really slow. And like we could train in any gym and make the most of it. But when you have the availability to train in better gyms, and like you say, when it's important to you and you know you want to make the most of it, don't you? Why wouldn't you, you know, travel to different gyms?
I think the only caveat would be if there's too many weapons in, like, for example, if the whole of Progress Works decided to switch to Ultraflex Leicester, like that would be the only time that I'd be thinking, God, like I don't think
it'd matter though. If you think about Ultraflex Rotherham, like it's almost too big to even
notice.
You just get on with it. Whereas Progress Works, because it's small and because it's enclosed and because of the lighting, you notice everything.
It's the lighting, man. I said it before, the lighting. So, yeah, that's that. Right, next one. Finlay Cade, FK, the real FK. Ever consider getting your own coach, or does coaching yourself help with the coaching? You put Kleeb, I'm guessing Click.
You've got a coach.
Oh, mate, don't know. Yeah,
make every single decision for you.
Every single decision. I send everything over.
Every single decision.
Yeah. Mate, why did you tell me to take a gram's worth of tests the other day? Like,
just thought it'd help. I thought you were. Really? I thought I'd put you on a 2 week Anavar cycle.
Really? Fair enough. Well, how come? Just to gain some fullness.
You looked a bit flat, didn't you?
Yeah, it looked a bit flat. 2 week Anavar cycle, that's what you need. And then come off, lose all the fullness, but congrats. You know, you were super physiological for 2 weeks. So no. I think there could be merit, if I'm honest, Finlay. I think it's an interesting one. A lot of people, for example, so people know, Finlay is one of my clients, so I'm not going to be like, you don't need a coach. Imagine he hears this and he's like, hey, mate, listen to a podcast.
Cancel the regardless.
Yeah, I've just cancelled the payment. Hopefully that's all good. Catch you later. But no, there's definitely merit. And I feel like they'll get to a point where if I was competing at the top level, so we're talking IFBB Pro Plus, I think there could be some merit. But and at the same time, like, it sounds quite like it's a cocky viewpoint to have, because at the end of the day, I've never competed before, but I've been lean plenty of times. My circle is very small and it's very honest. So for example, with Finn, I don't think you've ever really gone, oh my God, mate, this is mint, or this, like, you're very objective. Likewise, I am with you. You know, so it's not where, like, for example, if I was to take my top off in a gym, or if I was to pose in front of my mum or in front of friends or clients, they'd be saying, mate, you're really lean. Wow. Like, you're going to be ready early, or you're going to be doing this. And in reality, like, that's not what you want to hear. You want to be quite objective. And because I've been, I'd say, a kilo or two off stage condition plenty of times, at least three times in my life, more specifically two, that I was very, very close to being pretty much where I'd need to be. My perception of where I'd need to be isn't like the average folk who's never done a diet, never got lean, doesn't know how they respond. Like, every week now, I'm like, oh, I felt this before, this is good. Like, I almost know what to look for. And again, when it gets closer, we were chatting to a guy yesterday, weren't we, at a warehouse. And we said, right, when I'm 6 weeks out, 4 weeks out, and I'm very lean, there will be that element where I won't be able to accurately assess how I look. But that's where I'd be sending you photos. I'd be like having a look objectively, and I'd be saying, right, take my mind away from these. How am I actually looking? How am I feeling? Yeah, cool. How am I training? Yeah, exactly.
Like that. I almost think it... I think every single person could benefit from a coach. Like, I don't think there's anybody that won't, but no. I also think there's a point where you know yourself almost better than someone else could.
Yeah.
But like, you know, everybody knows their body better than someone else, but we'll have clients who think that they know, let's say, think that I want to do this, and we're like, but that's really not the best decision right now. Whereas like, you're not going to make those kind of mistakes now. But like you say, the leaner and leaner you get, your mind starts playing tricks on you, and you will, I guarantee you'll get to a point where you're like, mate, I need to be leaner. And I'll be like, I'll say, you really don't. And you've got to remember, you're doing physique as well. Like, if you get overly conditioned almost, it can be detrimental to your results. Like, if you go on and you're peeled to the bone and everyone else is a little bit fuller and not quite as diced when they're not actually looking for that, like, you got to remember what the actual... The sort of the goal is of that category, you know, what the criteria is. But yeah, I think for me, obviously I was coached by AJ and I learned a lot, and it helped like my coaching business as well, and helped me sort of understand the role of a coach more and things like that, and take some things from him and things. But I also think that, you know, that experience of having someone does help, but it doesn't mean that you don't need a coach. Like,
no,
like AJ would say himself, like, a lot of the decisions were made by both of us, which is good. Like, I think that's great. Like, we have clients who we discuss things with, and like, I think that works really well. But then I also think that gets to a point where
there's that democratic and autocratic
they know what they need to do. And then I do think that if they can, you know, keep their head screwed on, you can coach yourself very, very effectively. But there's some times here or there where you just need someone to either keep you grounded or push you in a different direction. Like, for example, when I obviously started with AJ, I was like, still, I'd never pushed up enough, really, had I? I was always lean. Like, and then I pushed up a decent amount and probably gained the most muscle I have ever. Like, really, apart from when you're a complete beginner. Like, but I wouldn't have done that on my own, because I'm like, oh no, I don't want to get fat. I want to look lean so I can take photos. Like,
where I think I was almost, I'm not going to say I was always a bit different, but like, when we started training, like, I'm a few years ahead of you, even though obviously I'm younger. Like, I'm 9 years into training. I've had plenty of push-ups. I was 100, I was heavier than I am now between 16 and 18. I've said that before on this. And like, I've been lean enough to the point where I probably could have competed. So I, for most 22-year-olds, not many people have the experience that I have, like being objective. And then likewise, I'm not going to say knowledge, but it would take a hell of a coach to know more than, let's say, most facets of training. And then that's not even discussing like then going to the pharmacology side of things. Like I know I'm very well versed in that. So for where my level is at, it won't be, it could be beneficial, but it's almost like I just want to see. And then I might say, I might take a step back and go, you know what? It would have actually been a better idea. I personally don't think it will be the case. And I think it will almost be one that I would know. It, I think it's one of those decisions that you'd know when it's needed. It's like a lot of things. You'd be like, if I get to 6 weeks out, 4 weeks out, and I'm ridiculously stressed out, but at the same time, like, I'm lucky in a way that, and you'll probably be smiling, I've got you to bounce ideas off, and we chat about pretty much everything. Yeah. And what we said last year was, yeah, again, we gained a lot. I think we both gained a lot of knowledge from you competing, me seeing it firsthand, likewise you did. But I feel like if we were to have the same knowledge now, and we were to prep you, let's say it was like me and you, I don't think you would have finished any worse than you did last year. Like, I think you could have easily brought the same kind of package. You'd be in better shape, obviously. And that's no disrespect to AJ, because at the end of the day, he held your hand through the whole process. But it was where we were kind of chatting. You said that you and him helped, like, made decisions. Mate, we were chatting post-sessions and thinking, you know, this could be that. And, like, I think that's the lovely evolution of it, is, like, you improved, I improved from it. And, like, now we've both been in a position where, like, if you were to prep next year, I know you said you weren't, but I don't think your first inclination would be, I need a coach. Would be, you probably go, yeah, I reckon I'd be all right. And then, like, you might compete, do it on your own, see how it goes. If I do well on my own, you'll go, right, this is probably how it's going to be. And it'll be where, I'm not going to say we prep each other, because it will never be where you're telling me exactly what to do training, or, mate, you need to drop this. On, like, you drop me a message Monday, hey, bud, cards have been pulled. But having that, like, honest opinion and almost taking an objective viewpoint is, it's rare, because a lot of people have levels of, like, bias. There's emotional kind of swings and preferences. But I think with the current circumstances, right now at the moment, I wouldn't consider getting a coach, if I'm honest. But I think later down the line could help. And then to answer his question about, like, does coaching yourself help? I think it depends. Like, Finley's a young lad. So he's coming through the realms of, like, training well. He's probably in a similar position to how maybe you were if you were to sign up with AJ, like, a year or two before. So, like, in the last 6 months together, he's grew at an absolutely ridiculous rate. Everything's in a far better position. But, and I think there is that benefit to having time on your own. But for the vast majority of individuals who, like, I'm not going to say aren't as about it, because Finley is about it, but having a coach would help, because it takes away any external stresses. You would just have to tick a box. You see the process day in, day out. I usually, when people message me about coaching and getting into it, I usually say it makes sense to work with a coach and see how they go through the process. And that usually will therefore help them become better coaches. So, yeah, there's plenty of benefits. There's benefits either side. But
I think for most people, like, it would be beneficial to have a coach, even at just at some point, especially at a younger age.
Yeah. When your knowledge is not going to be dependent. Like, I'm only where I am at and you are, it's due to our age. Like I've said to Finlay, when he's like, I think he's 17 now, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he should be way ahead.
Mate, in 2 years, like, he'll be where me and you are at, and he's going to be 19, you know? Like, knowledge-wise, if he applies himself, and so far he is, yes, I have no doubts at all. And that's almost what you have to view it as. Like, this is, for me, 7-8 years worth, like, after pissing around for the first year, of listening to every podcast I can listen to, watching every YouTube video I can watch, going on forums, researching about everything, to the point where I'm very confident that there's a lot more for me to learn, but I'm content with,
There's so much more. You never stop. And I think if you think that you know,
definitely don't.
Like, a lot of people, that's when you start, like, actually, you
know, slack.
You start becoming complacent when you think that you're ahead of where you are. And I know that we've probably both been victim of that before, where we think we're, like, ahead of where we actually are, and then we actually need to take a step back sometimes, like, fucking hell, there's still a lot more, like, we need to learn, and a lot more we can do to be a lot better than we are.
Yeah,
it's easy to become complacent when things are going well.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. Yeah, I was like that between like 18 when I was dieting, like 18 to 20. I remember like I'd do the same push up.
You think you know everything, don't you? Like at that time.
No. I thought you were taking the piss. I was dieting. I was like in the best shape in comparison to anyone my age group. I looked so much better than everyone I knew. So I was instantly like, well, I know everything. I'm doing this. And like, I'd just be like progressive overload, this, that. But like my accuracy was poor. But I wouldn't even know.
You wouldn't have taken any advice though. Like if I'd have come up to you now, like let's say me at this age, and it was like, oh mate, like let me take you through a set. Like well, obviously we don't do that, but imagine I did. You'd be like, nah, fuck off. Yeah. Like you wouldn't say that, but you'd be like, I'm all right. Like because at that age you're arrogant and you think you know everything. It's the same like not even around training, just around everything. It's like when you're growing up and your parents will tell you stuff and you're like, they don't know. It's like well, they do. They've got a lot more experience than you. Like, but yeah, it's just part of growing up, isn't it?
Yeah. No. Agreed. Right. Your question, mate.
They've gone again. I think I got one about staying natural or not.
I got one about that. Yeah, Conran B Fit.
What, asking if you're natural?
Yeah, and I said yeah. So he basically asked, when would you say to look at enhancement, i.e. yourself or a client, and why? And I think it's a bit of a silly question, if I'm honest. Because, like, not saying it's Conran personally, I'm just saying in general, against, kind of like the last question, you almost know. And it gets to a point where you have to weigh up the pros and cons and your potential and where you're going to be in the sport, where you're going to be in from your personal kind of backing. And then like the problem is a lot of individuals, like most gyms, and this is the scary thing, lads will, the 6 weeks before they go on holiday, will jump on test and Anavar and then go on a lad's holiday and then come back and look awful. Like I've had recently a few clients sign up and I'll definitely not name names. And again, they seem lovely. They seem like top lads, but they came to me from a previous coach and the protocols that they were told was pretty horrendous, like to the point of where it was like very dangerous. And these lads, when I assessed their training, they both agree that their training was pretty poor. And I was almost like, this is what the problem is. This is why you don't look that great. Like, this is what we need to focus on. Instead of taking X, Y, and Z, this is what you need to focus on. And there gets to a stage where I'm not going to say everyone has to take a jump. No chance. There's so much potential there for natural athletes. For example, with Finn, with myself, we could easily be both gaining at a very, let's say, not a slow rate, but you can make improvements year to year. Let's say if me and Finn both decided we're both going to stay natural, obviously one person hasn't, myself, but if we can say, right, let's both stay natural for as long as possible, mate, we'd still make progress on a year to year, month to month setting. But there would be not a diminishing returns effect, because I hate that. I hate the thought process. It just slows down. Mate, you've made very good improvements since your show. You know, like very, very good improvements. Like, have you blown up? No, you're not going to. Like, you're never really going to. But I would almost view it and I'd be thinking, again, what's your goals in the industry? Where's your, is your potential where it needs to be at? If you're jumping on gear for a holiday, you're a fucking weapon, like simple as, like that's literally the best way I can describe it. You're just a weapon. But if your goals exceed like what you can achieve in a natural realm, and it almost is regarding, like, I've always said, if I wasn't making money in the industry and it wasn't my livelihood and it wasn't something that I could see further, not monetary benefit, but my own personal development in, there'd be absolutely no point to take it, because the only other thing it would satisfy would be training kind of performance, which if anything is probably better than the visual kind of elements, because you train better and training is what you set your day around. So when I'd say, like, I would never really approach a client, I haven't yet, and said, hey mate, you need to take this, or you know what, you should be taking this. I come at it from a completely natural realm of coaching, where I look at it and think the vast majority of individuals that me and Finn work with, you need to improve your training, you need to improve your execution, you need to improve your nutrition, your other feedback and variables that we can control. That's going to be setting you apart. Plenty of lads can take whatever they want, train like shit, look like shit. Pretty simple. So I wouldn't look at it and say you have to take it this time, you have to do that. At the end of the day, if we're talking strictly to Conran, you're 18. You have plenty, plenty of years to go. And then at the same time, what's your goals? Like, do you think genetically, like, yes, you've got good size, but do you think genetically you could be an IFBB pro or a top level bodybuilder? Do you do it day in, day out? Like little things like that. So what's your opinion, mate, for, let's say, like if a client came to you and asked the same question, or if you were debating it with yourself? Because I'm guessing you'd probably say the same things. Like it would be the same kind of thought process.
I don't think, like, I have nothing against it. Obviously, I'm not for it. I had the same question, literally. Are you ever planning on competing enhanced, or will you always be natural? Like, I have no plans in the future to be enhanced. That doesn't necessarily mean that I won't be.
Yeah, because
I just paused it for everybody listening or watching. So if it goes all, if it does a little glitch, then you know why. But yeah, I was saying, I just had a question about obviously whether I would compete enhanced or natural, and I've not really got any future goals to be enhanced. But that doesn't mean that I never would. You know what I mean? I don't think you can never say sort of. It's like one of them. Like I'd never say never, but I'm not. I have no real plans on doing it. But that doesn't mean that I'm against it for anyone else. Like. Mm-hmm. I have more interest in enhanced bodybuilding, like 99% of people do. Like, yeah. People watch the Olympia, they don't watch the natural Olympia. Like, you know, there is more to it. There's a lot more, like, it is the sport. You know, it's not called enhanced bodybuilding, it's called bodybuilding, because that's the norm. So for anybody who wants to really be at that top level, then, you know, yeah, you've kind of got to accept that you're probably going to have to do that at some point. But I would argue that it should be almost like a last resort. It should be like the last thing that you do when you really know for a fact that that's what you want to do. Like, even if you're 16 and you know for a fact you want to be an IFBB pro, I wouldn't recommend that you just start gear at 16.
Oh, no.
I mean, I would be like, well, make the most of the next few years when you're in probably the best, you've got your best chance to be growing. If you maximize everything you're doing at that age, you're going to be incredible at 22, 23, 24. And then you can also get even an extra benefit then of jumping on gear. Like, yeah. I know Keefe wants to be an IFBB pro. And I think how he's worked it is like pretty much bang on in terms of like, look how strong he is. Look how good his training is. Look how fucking mint he looks when he competes. Like, imagine that. And then enhanced. Like, I think that is, if I was going to do it, that's how I'd do it. Like, and obviously I've competed naturally already. I know you're not competing naturally in the first place, but you know for a fact that you're at a level where you'll do well. Like, you're not deluded. You're not like, oh, I need gear to be better. Like, you don't. You'd have probably still, you know, done just as well without for these shows, because obviously it's not as if you've been on gear for years going into it. Like, so I just think most people nowadays think that it has to be part of it. Yeah, when it really doesn't. Like, there's so many people that are natural that look miles better than people that are enhanced.
Yeah, the people like the average gym that are on gear are the ones that you don't even expect it to be on, because they look so bad. Like, they look average.
I would argue that the majority of naturals who train with any form of intensity and know what they're doing a bit will look better than anyone who's enhanced who doesn't have a clue.
Yeah.
Like, you might not, like, there's a study, isn't there, that, like, what was it? It was like a 6-week study or something like that
where they sat on a sofa and gained
more muscle than the natural guys. Yeah. But I would argue that you know, you can find anything in the data, like, but you can see it, that it doesn't matter if you've gained more muscle. They look, you can tell, they just don't look right. You know what I mean? Like, there's people who are enhanced who just don't look right. You can tell they don't know how to train, but they're on gear. You can see it from a mile off. Like, they've got massive
calves. Massive calves, really round delts. Yeah, awful legs. They're literally, any musculature that actually requires any ounce of like balls to get after a set, they just don't have. At all. Like, I think it's almost like the lower half is the ones that you can tell, because you can, like, just like I said, your androgen receptors can be full as anything. You can literally just do pump work and get decent
legs.
Yeah, and then literally, like, anything that requires a bit of like actual mental fortitude, they're like, oh no, such legs are absolutely appalling, their backs are awful, upper back will be all right, mid to lower back appalling, you know, like it is
oosh, and then
just wank after that. And Yeah, it's a shame, really, because again, like, it is viewed as like almost hit, like, and you go on YouTube videos now and you'll hear people say, like, max out your natty potential, it takes 2 to 3 years. It doesn't, it takes so much longer, so much longer.
I'd argue there isn't
There's not, mate. You're not just gonna get to a point where obviously literally your progress stops. Obviously hormones are going to decrease.
That's what they class it as. Your natural potential is when your testosterone is going to start dropping as you get older, which is normal. Yeah. Like, I wouldn't class that as a potential. Like, you wouldn't be like, oh, that's my natural potential done.
Like, yeah, exactly. And it's not like trending down and then instantly your muscle mass trends down. Right. Like, it's just the rate of progression is going to slow down, mixing in with there's no new level of like novel stimulus, because your progress is no doubt going to get a little bit slower across like a week to week, month to month kind of setting. So all seems, one sec, Abster, what are you doing? That's appalling. Cheers. Yeah, sound. If you get out, that'd be fantastic. Sorry. She just came in to get the massage gun, knocked over the light, and is now lying on the bed. Actually, you can't be doing the massage gun and run the podcast.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, do you want to get out? Sound, sorry about this. Awful, mate.
You can't leave all that in.
Yeah, we'll leave all this in.
I love you.
All right, seriously, get out. Yeah, get out, Murray.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, seriously, get the fuck out. Get out. Sound, cheers. Mate, comes over, leans over, knocks everything down. Sound. Right, mate, if you can cut that out, that'd be good. I'll just leave it.
I'm not going to cut it out.
Yeah, it's just one of those, if I'm honest. But yeah, there's definitely not a time. You most likely know. But at the same time, like, it's one
I
of
don't
those.
Think you should be thinking about, like, no. Like you say, you'll know it when you know if it is going to be something that you do. Like, I've never really thought about it, to be honest. You know, when people are like, oh, you must think about it. Yeah. Not really. Like, I feel like if I was going to do it, or if I like had that sort of inkling in my mind now, I'd probably be like, yeah, I need to do it. I've never even really thought about it, because I know that I've got a lot more I can do naturally. And you know what I mean? Like, I don't feel like I have to use anything else to enhance my ability to grow. Like, yeah. I just think it shouldn't really be a thought process.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good thought process. I think a lot of people kind of skip that and they don't think about
it. Yeah, but it's sad, isn't it, really? Like, it's just
I think this is one of those things you could do a whole podcast on it. Like, you could properly go into depth with it, because there are so many individuals who don't know, and like, you could say, right, the X amount of years, and then you need to have the knowledge and then the understanding of it. And again, the vast majority of individuals jump in on so much, it's just absolutely absurd, and they don't understand any mechanisms of action, what works in good synergy, how to control say potentially any side effects. And they just say, right, they go to a guy, they say, take this, take that, they have their cycles stack planned out already, which is already pretty much shooting yourself in the foot. They're taking an AI to initiate, and then don't even know how their estrogen is going to respond. They're not doing blood work. It's like, Jesus Christ. Like, again, it's the issue, because it's non-regulated, and it's like, there's no main source of foundation of knowledge unless you know who to follow. So yeah, focus on training naturally. If I'm talking from a coaching standpoint for Comram, you'd be better off making sure to hit your macros every day. That's what you need to focus on, mate. Not under eating. That's what's going to give you more progress.
That is like, even that, for example, like, I feel like if you're not nailing all the basics, even if you do it, like, realistically, it's not going to be better for you than if you just nailed the basics.
Yeah.
Like, simple as that.
Yeah, I'd agree. Right. Go for it, mate. Must be approaching the last few now, surely.
Yeah, that's the last one I've got. This is from Will Jones. This is quite a good one, actually. So, reasons to program a pull/leg day. So, I'm pretty sure it means like a leg pull session. Pull leg. He's pulling our leg. How to structure it and the split it would fit into. So, yeah, basically, your thoughts on leg pull days. Do you like them? Where would you put them in? What split would you have them in?
Well, it's very important. You know, is he training with a girl during this session? Because that's going to be impacting recovery capability.
Got COVID. She gave him COVID. So it was what was the word? What did he use?
What do you mean?
I can't remember what word he used to describe the session. It wasn't horrendous. It was like disastrous session or something.
Disastrous. Shocking. Disastrous session. Gym's now shut down because I actually went and trained.
That bad.
Yeah, it was that bad, but I've got COVID now. So leg pull, if you think about it, you're going to be training, you're most likely, it used to be called a density day. This is what JP made quite popular, density, posterior day, whatever. And basically, it really depends on what you need to get out of the session. I feel like we gave a breakdown of a leg pull session in one of the podcasts. But ideally, I would most likely recommend, just because there's going to be so much musculature that's going to be taxed, I would definitely recommend having a rest day either side, ideally. So for example, if you were to program in, you might have it on Monday, you might have then Sunday and Tuesday off. So you'd want to rest day either side, because you could get away with training push, but then you've trained your full body in a 2 day kind of like rotation without a rest day. So I'd always try and recommend a rest day, because they are going to be physically let's say taxing, and then likewise psychologically taxing. Like if you have a hip hinge on this day, quite going to be quite challenging. You'll most likely have obviously a fair bit of like hamstring work, maybe a quad focus movement as well, so you might have a leg press, and they are going to be very, very taxing. And I feel like there's definitely going to be benefit. For example, with myself, I've transitioned my lower volume as I've got closer to competing. So for example, we started out the year and we were both running an upper lower sort of approach. We then, obviously due to a few niggles, but I'm going to kind of put them aside. I'm going to focus just on my frequency and volume. I actually shifted to a leg pull, a push and arms, a lower, and then a upper. So I could actually get in more push work over a weekly setting, still get 2 times peak frequency on my lower half, still get 2 times peak frequency on my back. And therefore I could almost maintain the 2 times peak frequency, but I could just put additional volume onto my pressing musculature. And then I transitioned from that leg pull session, instead of it being like a direct leg slash pull, it was more pull and hams. And that's almost how the approach is currently. So I can still tick off my hamstrings from like a musculature standpoint at like that current like 1 time to 2 time per week frequency, with my direct quad work being twice per week. So I currently technically have a leg pull session in, but it's not your standard leg pull session. Here's your lower movements. Here's your pull movements. And then we go from there. So I think I'd have a rest day either side. Programming would massively depend on what you think you need and what you need to focus on. So for example, you'd know Will better than me. He might have a quad movement there. He might have a hamstring movement there. It might be more of a pull focus session. I have Brody. He's on a similar split to me. He wants to compete in physique next year. I have him doing a leg pull session, but it's more so like, there's like a leg press in there as well, but it's also pull volume. So it really depends on what you need out of the session, but the kind of basis is aligned there, mate. So if you want to finish us off, if there's anything that I missed out, feel free.
No, I think it's one of those where you probably don't need a leg pull day. Like, I would argue that it's quite a luxury almost. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. When, especially at the start of training, and when you're really trying to build like your foundations of muscle, like, I would argue that an upper lower split or a pull day, a push day, a leg day would be more beneficial, just in terms of managing overall fatigue, because like you say, that full leg pull day is going to be absolutely brutal, and that is going to have a massive impact on the rest of your training sessions. I think it's fashionable is what I would say, and I think that yeah, attracts a lot of people. The name of it, the density day thing, the fact that it's full posterior chain. We've had people ask questions, what do you think to like a full posterior chain day versus a full anterior chain day? It's like a pull day and a push day, but including like pull for legs and push for legs, which makes as much sense as doing upper and lower, like, but not really, because you're going to be getting a lot more cross transference of doing like a lower versus an upper. There's going to be minimal cross transference, whereas a posterior versus anterior day, there's going to be quite a lot. But I just think it's...
Mate, imagine going for a flat chest press and being like, oh lad, how many sets you got on the leg press? Just like, oh yeah, I'm just on the Smith machine press, I'm on the high incline Smith.
I've had a few questions about it.
I think it's funny, but in theory, thinking about it,
I think it's one of them where if you were really, really lagging in terms of your posterior chain, then it wouldn't be a bad idea. But the only benefit it would have is that you would potentially be able to increase your frequency and your volume on those body parts. It's not a magical day that's going to make you massively dense. Like, I think that's what people think. Oh, leg pull, I'm going to gain loads of thickness. It's like,
I'd argue you probably gain less, because you can't put the actual time in on the session. And the energy needed.
We were looking at planning one, weren't we? And we were thinking like, right, what would we actually have in it? And we're like exercise five and we're like, this is going to be horrendous. Like, yeah, it will just break us. Like, and Will trains yeah. hard as well. Like, Will trains really well now. I don't know if he'd yeah. be able to manage it that well. And if he did, the volume would be so low. And I feel like yeah. it would actually take away from his overall sort of volume on those body parts. So I think like what we do and what I do with quite a lot of clients, when the hamstrings are a weak area, which they are a lot of the time for let's say 18 to 20 odd year old guys, usually hamstrings, legs overall, but often hamstrings are quite lagging in comparison to quads and to the upper body. So I'll often put hamstrings on a pull day, like exactly what you said, because one, they can actually help in terms of warming up going into a hinge movement, and two, then you're also getting that added volume. I sometimes have it later on in the session with like more of an emphasis in the length and position, but yeah, I would almost sort of sway towards that side of just adding some hamstrings and some adductors to a pull day versus doing a full leg pull day where you're trying to do a hack or a leg press alongside a hinge, alongside a chest supported T-bar. Like, it's a lot of big demanding movements which can be quite hard to recover from, which will likely take away from the rest of your training.
Yeah, I'd agree, mate. Yeah. Was that the question in its entirety? Because I feel like there might have been something else that you added on top of that. Was that it? Like the leg pull?
How to structure it and the split it would fit into.
So it kind of answered the split. You want the rest of it side. Depend. Structure, again, yeah, kind of spoke about that, depending on obviously what you need. I feel like I said, you can easily go for a few different approaches. For the vast majority of individuals, it will be like with Brody's, I have him where he's like doing like one set of a leg press, one set of a hinge. And I've said to him, it's just because he's training four times per week frequency. I think it would be better if it was maybe at five times per week frequency and you could spread it out across the week, because therefore you could apply more focus, intensity, and then therefore like accuracy from not being mentally written off that you're going to leg press six movements into a leg pull session. So, to conclude, we have...
Go on, sorry. That's a good point, like just overall frequency, because like I do have a couple of clients on a leg pull day because they can only train three or four times a week and it can tick a lot off. Yeah. If you literally... But because the question was from Will, I didn't really think of that because he trains five times a week. But yeah, if you have, let's say, only the ability to train three or four times, then it might be a decent option to add in to tick off a good amount in one session.
Yeah, that's spot on. Right, and then to conclude the questions, Jesse Oldenburg, implementing an aggressive cut, influencing your muscle mass, decreasing 250 calories for 4 weeks. That's not aggressive if you're decreasing 250 calories.
It depends.
Every week for 4 weeks, so he's pulling 1,000 calories from... Yeah, but even if his calories were 2,000, yes, you could argue that's like a decent shift. But I wouldn't be saying that's drastic. Like, that's what, 10, like 15%. Like, it's not going to be a lot of like a percentage. He's messaged me about Jesse Oldenburg. He's asked me about dieting in the past. I feel like I don't know, but I know he's messaged about me about him dieting. So I feel like he's probably one of those guys who's he's dieting. He doesn't know if he's being too aggressive. He's focusing on like, is he going to lose muscle mass? Because he knows if he diets too aggressively, you're going to lose muscle mass. And I almost despise this, because if your training's still in a good spot, if you can still train aggressively, as long as your protein isn't silly low, and you can like literally, I'm convinced in this like fullness level, which will be awful, but you could diet on literally on a non-training day, like trace carbohydrates, like probably like baseline levels of protein, and then enough fat for you to hormonally not be in the gutters. And you could do a lot of steps and a lot of cardio. And as long as you prioritize your training days with carbohydrates, so your glycogen stores are not like absolutely empty, and you can still train well, and your protein, as mentioned, is in a good spot, and you can train progressively. If you get stronger, you're not going to lose muscle, really. You might lose fullness, which when food goes back up, that's what people think. Body weight goes up and they look better. And they're like, I've just put on a kilo's worth of muscle, 2 kilos. No, you just literally refilled up the glycogen. That's what it is.
Like,
but the problem is being in a phase for too long, like that's what I'd argue is the worst, like with this. Sorry, mate, I'm interrupting.
No, you're not.
I'd say with like Jesse, yeah, like him thinking, oh, I'm gonna decrease this by that, I'd be arguing, mate, be more aggressive, make sure your training's in a good spot, when you're done, then you can get into a gaining phase and actually put on what you're trying to work for, which is muscle mass, sooner than you thinking, you know what, I don't want to do a 4-week diet, I'm going to do an 8-week diet, but I'm going to be quite methodical and slow. Just get out, bro.
And get out. That's what you should focus on. I think it, like,
yeah,
it's one of them where I think it depends on that individual, because I know a lot of people who are like, I would rather diet for a little bit longer and take a little bit more of a relaxed approach because they know that that benefits them.
Yeah.
I would argue for the majority of people, when the goal is that you still want more muscle, like the goal isn't, let's say, a prep or a long-term fat loss phase where you're a bit obese and you need to lose a lot of weight, I would argue that a shorter time frame is going to be more favorable because there's less time spent in a deficit, and with less time spent in a deficit means less chance that you're going to be in a less optimal position to be building muscle. Obviously it depends on how lean you get, but like you say, you know, I would almost argue the more aggressive the better. And there's actually quite a lot of data out there as well that a lower calorie diet can actually be just as more beneficial for fat loss and just as beneficial in regards to performance over a shorter period. So I think it's almost like overlooked. People think, oh, you know, you can't be too aggressive because you're going to lose muscle, when realistically, if you start in a really good spot on a lot of food and training performances as high as possible, no matter how aggressive you are, as long as you're not getting stupidly lean and not eating at all, then your performance is still going to be good and you're going to hold on to as much muscle as possible.
Another pause because Finn had to go to the toilet, even though the podcast is literally going to be ended now, which is just a sign of immaturity. You just couldn't last, could you?
Oh, I couldn't. That's what it was. It was coming out.
No, you just couldn't do it. Yeah, you just couldn't do it. He actually weed on the way downstairs as well, which wasn't ideal to his toilet. But no, that is another episode of the Once You're In, You're In podcast. Episode, what did we say, 14? I think it was 14. 14, yeah, 14 or 15. Or 15. But yeah, as always, guys, appreciate, again, I don't really know how anyone gets around to the intros, but we do appreciate story tags. We also appreciate any questions asked. The usual kind of outro, we put up the question box Tuesday. Make sure if there's any questions that you guys want answered in the following episodes to be answered, then ask away. But other than that, hopefully everyone that's listened has enjoyed. If you've got any recommendations for, again, what we want to be going through, feel free to drop them in the comments below or in the question box when you send them through on Tuesday. And other than that, again, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you guys later.